We'll call the Mining and Outdoor Recreation Committee to order. Representative Dill is moving the minutes. All in favor of moving the minutes from what date was it?
February 25th.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Welcome to the committee, Representative Dill. House File 238. Representative Dill moves House File 238 for possible inclusion. Representative Dill, please proceed with your bill.
I am certain, Mr. Chairman, that every deer hunter in the room that's 83 years old will like this bill. If they're 84 before the next deer hunting season. The bill pretty well explains itself. It's for a constituent wrote me a letter from Two Harbors, actually Senator Bach a letter from Two Harbors, and he's 84 years old presently. And he said that he hunted deer every year of his life that he could hold a gun except during war, quote unquote. And that he can only hunt 2 hours a day maximum because he gets too cold and the hills are too steep, the deadfalls are too high. And he saw nothing but doe, quote unquote. And he wants to be able to shoot a deer. As all of us, we all try to serve our constituents and do what they ask us to do within reason. And so there, henceforth, the bill. I do want to point out that on line 1.9 and 1.10, it does talk about taking antlerless deer by party hunting, which is not permitted under this provision. So only the 84-year-old or older deer hunter would be able to actually be involved in the actual act of taking a deer. I feel people from behind me like leaping forward to get up here and testify, so based on that, that's my whole presentation at this point.
Questions? Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No questions. Good bill, Dill. That's all I got to say about this.
Representative Constantine.
Actually, thank you, Mr. Chair. I had an 84-year-old guy stop me last week, and he wanted to be able to hunt with a crossbow during bow season. Could that be an amendment to this bill that we 84
no.
and over? Nope.
No.
Okay. I guess not. Well, in that case, Bud will be real happy he can hunt.
Any other questions? Representative Hertoff.
No, he was first.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bill, I want to thank you. This is a great bill. I look back in my hunting party, although I didn't hunt with my relatives, I hunted with a group. And what these basically grandfathers taught us hunting, no words can express what they've taught us. And I think it's only fair that the amount of time that they've spent teaching this tradition to us, we should give them something back.
Representative Hertoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would concur with Representative Johnson's comments, but I would also like to add that I don't think that the number of 84-year-olds and the number of does that would be killed under this circumstance is going to create any management problem, and I support the bill.
Any other questions? Anyone in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul T. Lander, Wildlife Chief for DNR.
Welcome.
Thank you. I just want to make a couple of comments about the bill. We did look to see what kind of an impact it may have on our deer management. In 2014, there were 2,190 deer licenses sold to persons 84 years of age and older. So from a statewide perspective, we don't see that as a population management issue for deer. However, in permit areas where either few or no antlerless permits are issued, we have a concern with that because it could affect our ability to rebuild deer populations in those permit areas.
Any questions for Mr. T. Lander? Any further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
You're welcome. Thank you.
One more call for anyone else that would like to testify for or against the bill. Seeing none, Representative Dill renews his motion that House File 238 be held over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill.
Thank you,
Representative Dill. Good bill. Representative Newton. Welcome to the committee, Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. Mr. Chair, I appreciate this opportunity to come before you. Which bill would you like to have us do first?
Which one would you like to do first, Representative Newton, 280 or 656?
Let's do 656, Mr. Chair.
The chair will move House File 656 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please make the presentation.
Mr. Chair, I have Mr. David Olson here with me. This is a constituent bill, and I'd like to have him present his case.
Very good. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Dave Olson. I'm just representing myself here.
Very good.
I have some maps to hand out to you. A couple of years ago, the hunting regulations in the state of Minnesota with respect to the registration of big game was changed in a couple of different manners, and I applaud the one manner that they allowed the inclusion of the internet and the telephone service to be used for the registration of big game. The other area it was changed was that it always used to be for many years that big game had to be registered within 24 hours after the end of the season, and that was changed to 48 hours after the taking of the big game. The 48 hours presents a problem. As you'll see by that map, there's a large portion of the state of Minnesota that has no cell phone service, at least for Verizon in the northern half of the state, some of the most remote areas of the state itself. Getting into and out of my hunting shack 2 years ago when I was lucky enough to get a deer took 3 hours. To me, it really doesn't make a difference whether that deer is registered within 48 hours of the kill or 24 hours after the end of the season, because it's not going anyplace anymore. It's not going to get up and run around anymore. And so that presents a problem. It's just a pain to get in and out of camp. And I feel lucky that I only have maybe a two-hour hike to get into camp. Some of these guys that are going into more remote areas than I am, it takes them longer yet, and it doesn't make any difference. One thing that could be changed is because the internet and telephone service does not require the presentation of the animal, but if you come in to register it, you have to present it. I don't know why the difference is. When the individual that's bringing it in, even if he didn't bring it in, could just pick up the landline at that point in time and register the deer, and it would still be a legal animal. Just having the deer there presents no reason why it should have to be presented. I'd like to see the law change back to 24 hours after the end of season for the simple fact that, A, you can take a look at the map, no cell phone, no internet coverage in large portions of the northern part of the state, at least for Verizon, and it doesn't make any difference, at least that I can see, as to why that deer has to be registered within 48 hours after the taking. It went for decades that it was 24 hours after the taking, or after the end of season.
Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Questions, members? Mr. Olson or Representative Newton?
No. Mr. Chair, I'd like to have this laid over if possible.
Oh, Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not to the bill specifically, but it just reminded me of something that I wanted to comment on in front of this committee anyway, and it's actually kind of interesting that you're talking about there not being any cell phone service in northern Minnesota to call the DNR to register your deer, because some people may not know that the DNR has actually outsourced the service for registering big game, and so when you call to register your deer, you're actually calling down to Tennessee or one of these southern states to say that you've shot an animal in Minnesota. That came to my attention a couple years ago because my brother called to register his deer and the person had a southern accent. So we actually send millions of dollars of taxpayer money every year to some other state so Minnesotans can call there and register their big game. So I just thought of that when because of the topic of the bill. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, the chair renews his motion that House File, I'm sorry. Anybody else in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Once again, please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Paul Thielander, Wildlife Chief for Department of Natural Resources. I just want to mention a few points about the bill and what we see about the bill. And I think it was mentioned earlier that prior to the 2013 season, deer had to be registered within 24 hours after the close of the season, and then either before the deer was processed commercially or privately. Beginning in 2013, so for the last two seasons, we've required registration to occur within 48 hours of taking, and with the processing clause in there as well. But we feel that the change that was made 2 years ago improves compliance with registration, helps us to ensure that we obtain the best harvest data possible. And, you know, accurate harvest data is very important to managing deer populations. That's one of our most important data pieces, so want to make sure we get the best data we can get. And we have received very few complaints about the change of 48 hours of taking, so we'd prefer to stay with the current requirement. I would offer that we could work with the author of the bill to issue special permits to hunters in remote areas to allow more time for them to register if that's a hardship for those hunters.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Lloyd.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So any idea how much it's going to cost to start issuing special permits and you know, how that process would work? I get real nervous about expanding state government, and that looks like a good way to do it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, I guess at the moment I don't know what it would cost. I don't envision that as a very costly effort, though, to issue permits to a few folks, but I don't have exact numbers today.
Representative Dill?
I had the same thought. I thought if they've got time to issue permits for deer that can't get registered within the time, they should spend that time over at PCA working on the wild rice standards.
Additional comments? Anyone else like to speak from the audience? Thank you for your testimony.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'd like to respond to this individual's request here. You know, I understand that they want to have the date and time that the animals are taken, but every time you register the deer, whether it's on the internet, by phone, or in person, that is always a question that's asked, is when was it taken? And so I'm not viewing that as a huge deal. I mean, even if your season in, like in northern Minnesota, goes for 2 weeks, they're still going to ask that same question: when and what time was that animal taken? So it's recorded at that point in time.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I have to agree with this gentleman. When you harvest deer, you have to put the sight tag on it, and on that sight tag is the date in either AM or PM when that deer was taken. So that information is already being put on the tag, and which also has to match the registration.
Okay. And without that sight tag being attached, that deer is illegal, and the DNR can at that point in time confiscate that animal.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Craig Engel, Executive Director for the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association.
Welcome.
And we do oppose this change. We brought this before our membership last weekend, and the feeling was the current system is not that onerous. We have a lot of our members who are there who hunt in remote places, but more importantly, the application of this law, this change, would be statewide, and that is of concern to us. The second concern is that it creates an additional 24-hour window after the season closes that provides a potential for illegal taking and registration for 24 more hours than is currently available. So those were our primary concerns. So we do not support this change.
Very good. Any questions? Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Okay, with that, the chair will renew his motion that House File 656 be held over for possible inclusion in an omnibus game and fish bill. Thank you. Now you have another bill.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Representative Newton. The chair will move House File 280 for possible inclusion in the omnibus game and fish bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This also is a constituent bill, and okay. I would like to ask Mr. Jerry Hansen, who brought the idea to me, to speak to the bill.
Very good. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
I'm Gerald Hansen. I represent people that take their dogs out in the woods and fields. This bill, basically, I'd like to read the statute and how we'd like to change it.
Sure, go ahead.
The current statute reads, no person may allow their dog to chase or kill big game. Between January 1st and July 14th, a dog that is observed wounding, killing, or pursuing in a way that endangers big game may be killed by any person. A peace officer or conservation officer may kill a dog that endangers big game at any time of the year. A person or persons is not liable for the damage for killing the dog. This is an old statute, and it's had tragic consequences to many people. One of the most famous cases was Malcolm Moose's situation, where his golden retriever was shot for allegedly chasing deer. The person that did the shooting said he'd seen the dog chasing a doe. He yelled at it and was shot. This is a 2-year-old golden retriever. The dog at that point was dead. No evidence was taken to prove that the man had seen the dog chasing deer. It was just his word at that point. Also, this is a golden retriever. Golden retriever is a dog that kind of likes to stay with the owner. So Malcolm Moose's son was out there looking for the dog, so that it wasn't that the dog was completely left on its own. The dog had possibly made a mistake. Maybe the dog was chasing deer. The statute doesn't have a bar or standard when a dog can be shot. It just says in a manner that endangers big game. Well, is this standard met when the dog is just sniffing in the woods? Or possibly in Malcolm Moose's case, where the dog ran it for a mile? I would say this golden retriever would have given up on that track. Just being a golden retriever, come back to the owner. Malcolm Moose could have been fined for that. He probably would have been happy to pay for the $200 fine for that. It's overly severe in that case to shoot the dog, I think. The statement, observed wounding, killing, or pursuing in a manner that endangered big game, is very ambiguous. To some people, that's a dog out there just sniffing, and deer are getting out of its way. A dog owner cannot go in the field with the population that the Deer Hunters Association would like without affecting the deer. I mean, the deer are out there. I don't care where you go, there's going to be a deer out there. The deer may run away from the dog, but that doesn't mean the dog is chasing deer. It just means the dog is out there and the deer are getting away from it. There's no size requirement. Say if you have a dachshund that's doing a good job of chasing deer. So what? I mean, it's going to quit. If it does catch up, the deer is going to stomp it into the ground. It's not going to hurt the deer. There's no ability requirement. I mean, when Fluffy catches up to the deer, it's still Fluffy. It doesn't turn into the temperament of a timber wolf and have the same capacity. It's still Fluffy. The statement that the dogs out in the woods are putting stress on the deer, when the deer are in a weakened condition from January 1st to July 14th. Well, you have to put this in perspective. The things that are actually killing deer are the deer hunters, 140,000 of them, plus the ones that they wound, plus the bear, the timber wolf, the coyotes, cars, cold winters. I don't know how many deer dogs kill. We can ask the DNR how many that they propose to kill, but you have to put this in perspective. How many do they kill? The small game hunter buys a small game license, and he should be able to use these wildlife management state land safely without somebody shooting his dog for little or no reason. The way it is now, the chances of a dog being shot depends on the exposure to the public, not if it's actually doing anything wrong, but just the amount of exposure it's to the general public. There's a certain percent of these people who will shoot a dog for being out there. This between January and 14th slot proves that. I had a secretary when I worked as a realtor for Adams Associates. She brought her dog with go deer hunting and tied the dog up. The dog broke his chain, tracked her out to her deer stand. A basset hound followed her. Both dogs were shot. They were shot for tracking Cindy out to her stand during deer season. They weren't chasing deer whatsoever. They were tracking Cindy. So the situation, first off, the statute is not written clearly. It doesn't set a standard for when a person can shoot a dog. All it just says is you can shoot a dog for allegedly chasing deer and not report it. The DNR has a much stricter standard on when they shoot a dog, and the reason that they have a much stricter standard is because one of their conservation officers shot a dog that he couldn't prove was doing any damage. So the DNR said, oh, we got a little problem with the standard. So they have a departmental policy that they have to have proof, and they have to have write a report, which the general public doesn't do. And the general public can shoot a dog and not even report it. So what's the incentive for that person to do a good job of looking at the standard that's very confusing? There's none. There's other states, the state to our east, Wisconsin, uses dogs extensively to hunt game. Two types of big game, in fact. Bear and timber wolves. Well, the timber wolves is kind of thrown out the window because nobody can hunt them right now. But and they do have problems between the people that sit in stands and the people that want to use a dog to hunt. But they have it on the bear season, so first the people that hunt over bait get to use first crack, and then the dog people, and then they switch it around. So that North Dakota, I checked with North Dakota, and the way their statute reads on this situation reads this way: unattended dogs harassing or killing big game animals. Any district game warden may kill any unattended dog harassing or killing big game. No action for damages may be maintained against the person for the killing. So both states, our east and the west, do not let the general public shoot a dog for allegedly doing damage. The owners of these dogs, the dogs are actually doing damage, can be fined. And we're not asking to change that. We're just asking for a dog that's maybe young or not completely trained to get a little slack. And we're asking for the situation where we don't have an educated public out there not to be able to shoot the dog. Go ahead, Jared.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hansen has made his case. I think that we have some people who wanted to speak against the bill as well, and I'd like to have him be able to rebut anything they may say.
Well, Well, we're going to take some testimony or some questions from the committee to start with, as long as Mr. Hansen is here. Representative Enzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Representative Newton, this might work, might actually save some deer, but only if they live on University Avenue or in Shoreview or Anoka, because up north, if there's any situation where a berry picker or a mushroom hunter or somebody else is out in the woods in where I live and has to call a conservation officer or a deputy sheriff to come out where I live to deal with a dog chasing a deer, well, that law enforcement person might get there next month. Certainly not in time to prevent a dog from killing a deer. So, I mean, I really appreciate your testifier, and I appreciate, I like dogs and all of that, but my goodness, this just doesn't seem to be workable. Thank you.
Could I comment on that?
It goes through the chair.
Mr. Hansen.
The situation where an individual shot a dog, in every case that I know of, in my personal experience, they've shot it outside of that slot and the dog wasn't running deer. So you got to look at it from the dog owner's perspective, too.
Sure.
Cindy's dogs weren't chasing deer. The person in Day's dogs, Labradors, were just out there. They weren't chasing deer, but they got shot for it. So the public is not qualified to make that decision. If the DNR wants to have a school for dog shooters, okay. But, I mean, we have a school for people that have concealed carry.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, I have no real big feelings about the bill for or against, but just a couple corrections. It seems like is that purebreds are some of the worst deer chasers that we have for some reason. They're high strung or whatever. Some of the problems we had up north were most of the time collies, German shepherds, some type of bull or whatever. But then and the other thing is they rarely catch the deer. Most of the damage done in the deer is the pursuit itself. It runs them out of shape, depletes their system, either that or aborts a fawn. And so they don't really have to catch them to kill them. There's a lot of deer that are killed just by this pursuit. And I think that's why the law is vague when it says, like North Dakota, harassing or killing, because a lot of time the harassing, when they're in bad shape from the spring anyway, it kills them. So it would be whether the bill passed or not, you know, it doesn't make a difference to me, but I just wanted to get those comments in.
Representative Anzella, did you have a follow-up to
that? Oh, no.
Okay.
No. All right.
My comment,
Mr. Hansen?
My comment to that is you've got to consider the stress that dogs do compared to all the other stress that legal and illegally put stress on the animal, and it's small. Are we going to have sporting dogs in the field and people that can walk their dogs out the woods, or are we just going to outlaw it?
Representative Metzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm kind of in the middle on this, too. I don't, you know, think it's a bad idea in terms of putting a little protection out there for the dogs, and we could probably clarify the language. I guess my question would be for the DNR, anyone, do we have any rules that allow you to shoot a dog if a kid is being chased on a bike in town? I see some shaking heads back there. You don't got to come all the way down here to answer that. I think this law is in place for some of the reasons we talked about. My point being, like, it is kind of funny on face value, but, you know, we do want to protect the herd and, you know, the hunting season as well. But overall, I think we got something we can find middle ground on here, and I'll definitely work with you, Jerry, to keep it moving forward.
One thing you have to remember here is that the seasons overlap. The pheasant season happens during deer season. Most of your seasons
over because the deer season is so long, they overlap. So you're going to have these people out in the same areas at the same time. And then when January 1st comes around and people want to run the coyotes, then it's open dog season. So these people have waited till the deer season gets over, and January 1st comes, and now it's open dog season. When are these people going to get a safe time to hunt? These are the same people that are raise families, pay taxes, should be able to use that resource just like the deer hunters. But they have the threat over their head the whole year.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hansen, I just want to clarify, did you say a couple of the examples you used were during the deer season where someone's dog got shot?
Yes. Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Hansen, and DNR can correct me if I'm wrong, but the general public only has the authority between January 1st and July. There's no legal deer season open during that time. And so I just want to clarify, if someone shot a dog during deer season and they weren't a peace officer or a conservation officer, they were breaking current law, and we don't need to change the law to prosecute them. I don't know if you have a comment on that, but that's against the law currently. There's no new law needed for that.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to comment on that. That is true. But the problem with that is the dog is dead. You can go to court all you want, but the dog is dead. And the general public doesn't seem to care when that slot is. You know, these people that had their dog shot, they were shot during deer season, not within the slot. I don't know how you're going to change that. I mean, the statute's been there forever, but the still dogs are being shot. And it doesn't help an owner to go to court. Some of these dogs, you go to court and say if you're going to get the value. The value is only $200. I mean, it's a mixed breed dog. But to that family, it's very important. I had nieces that their little spaniel repelled an attack by another dog. So what's that worth to that family? I mean, where the kids didn't get tore up by a dog, it's worth a lot. So you can't just say, well, your dog's dead, what was it worth? Well, it was a mixed breed. $200? I mean, it's too late to put the person back into the position he was. And I don't think there's an... and I'd like to ask the DNR how many deer that they think dogs kill. I mean, if it's a small number, insignificant, maybe this shouldn't be here. You gotta weigh the benefits to both sides. And I don't think, I think it's severely against the dog owner at this point.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And well, I certainly respect where you're coming from, Mr. Hansen, and someone who's worked real hard to always make sure our dogs were trained to not chase deer, because unfortunately some of us have seen the very sad situation in the wintertime when dogs do chase deer. And I got to be honest, I've never shot a dog, even though I've seen many, many chase deer, including purebred golden retrievers actually tackle and catch the deer. So they can do it. They don't need to be very big, and they have a huge advantage during certain snow conditions. And it's a very unfortunate situation, and it's very, very sad to see. And and the fact that you're seeing this outside, we shouldn't pass a law for something that's already happened that's against the law. That doesn't prove anything to go after this part of the law if people are doing something in a different time of the year. So where I certainly understand where you're coming from, and people should not... I got to be honest, they're not very often going to be able to catch a deer on dry land. That's why the timing of this is what it is. So I understand where you're coming from, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
We've got three more representatives that would like to speak, and then we'll take some testimony from the audience. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, to the testifier, Representative McNamara brought up one of the points I want to talk about is
the incidents that you brought up, it was already illegal for them to do that. There was civil action they could have taken on behalf of those dog owners against the person who did the shooting. But in rural Minnesota, we have another issue. I live about 50 miles north of here. I grew up on a dairy farm, and not only was a deer issue, we actually had to go out and shoot dogs because they were chasing our cattle. Besides the deer, they're chasing cattle and livestock. We had a big issue a few years ago of people from the metro going up and dropping their dogs off and just letting them run. These were the animals that were chasing the deer. We also have the issue where we also have another statute in law right now that a person is supposed to be in control of his dog at all times when it's off their property. And apparently this may not be happening. Dogs do run, and that happens. And it's an unfortunate situation. But when you're off your property, you need to be really sure you have control of your animals. And one thing that bothers me about this particular piece of legislation is it's a peace officer or conservation officer. I have over 27 years as a peace officer. In all the time I worked driving around in my squad car, in the 460 square miles I covered, not one time did I see a dog chasing a deer. Because I wasn't out in the woods. I was driving on the roads. Now, when I've gone hunting or gone snowshoeing or snowmobiling out in the woods, I was seeing it quite a bit. So it's very difficult for law enforcement or conservation officer to deal with this. In my area, one conservation officer covers 1.5 counties. Can't be everywhere at once. It's very difficult for them. There's days that we'd never see a conservation officer for a week, 2 weeks at a time, because they're busy elsewhere. And so it's very difficult for them to deal with this issue because they're just not around. Law enforcement has a lot of trouble just handling the calls that they do have. When a dog is chasing a deer, we'll get a call by this what's proposed. And it might be 2 hours before we have a chance to even get there. Where does the dog live? We didn't see it happen. It's just information. Is it unfortunate some things happen? Yes. But we also, I don't think this is going to take care of the problem, because the problem you're talking about did not even occur during the slot period. So I have a lot of sympathy for the family members that have lost their dogs, but I don't think this is going to stop it. It's going to take effort on all sides to deal with the problem. The dog owners, making sure that they're in control of their animals. We're going to have to make sure that the people understand when and when they cannot do this. If they're doing this during deer season, they're in violation of the law. And the worst part, that those were the examples you were bringing up, those that were already violating the law. So it makes it difficult for us to want to change something when what you want to change is already against the law.
Thank you. Representative Louis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just some comments on behalf of the deer involved, and there's no one here, I guess, able to speak to that, so I'll give it a try. And here's what I see up in my area, and it's reasonably rural. It's not all the way up north, but we've got about half the county. No one lives there. It's either state or county land. We have issues with groups of dogs that chase deer in the winter. You get a lot of snow, and even a small dog can cause a real problem. They run them into water. Deer get real goofy when they get chased. They run into water. They run across the highway. They get ran out on ice that they wouldn't normally go on. The issue of a peace officer being by happenstance coming onto this situation is just really rare. You know, we do. Somebody mentioned drop dogs. We have folks somewhere in the state that come up and drop their cats and dogs in my neighborhood and expect us to take care of them. You know, some of those get involved in that. Somebody mentioned livestock here. One of the things that has to be determined when you have a loss of livestock is what killed it. And quite often, it's dogs. So this idea that, you know, dogs won't pretty much hurt anything, not where I live. When they're not under the control of their owner and they're not, they can be extremely dangerous to livestock, to deer. And the issue here is, you know, we don't have pheasants up in our country, so it's not even an issue. But there's no pheasant season where I live. You know, so this business of, you know, other hunters out there, you know, we hunt a lot of grouse up our way, a lot of great grouse dogs and a lot of duck grouse dogs. I am absolutely not aware of though any of those dogs being shot in season for involved in chasing deer. But again, I'm going to speak up for the deer here. You know, we all have a responsibility, and if you own a dog, that's part of it. And you just have to have seen one of the pictures I can think of, the Palisade, Minnesota. Six dogs had a deer down, and they were just literally tearing it apart on the Mississippi River, got onto the ice so it couldn't get away. And a couple folks saw that. Drove back, brought a weapon out, and they did shoot a couple of those dogs. They weren't able to shoot all of them. Conservation officer spent a week and a half trying to track those dogs down and never for sure got them. So there's another side to this story, at least where I live. You know, you've just got a responsibility to have that dog under control. Particularly if it's on your own property, that's your business. But boy, when you're out on either other people's property, or that dog is, you have a responsibility for that dog. And boy, once they get into deer chasing, you know, one of the toughest things I dealt with in life was we had a little spaniel, as you're talking about, and that little spaniel decided to chase sheep. And that ended that spaniel's life, because once they pick that up, it's almost impossible to break that habit unless you're going to chain them up, never let them go on their own. But I can still remember the day that that's the cruel world we live in. But again, you know, somebody spoke up for the sheep in our next door neighbor's place, and that dog was done, because you can't allow that to happen. So again, I'm going to speak up for the deer. There's dogs out there, and they need to be dealt with when it happens, not 2 or 3 weeks later. If a conservation officer is lucky enough to track them down, it just doesn't work that way. So,
could I respond to these two gentlemen
quickly?
Mr. Hansen, the situation with domestic animals that are privately owned, the law is clear on that. They can be shot, and we're not asking for that change. If a dog even looks like it's harassing cattle or sheep, whatever, we don't have a problem with that. As far as a dog being under control, you got to remember the use of the dog. I mean, if your dog is going to hunt grouse, it's pretty close to you. Your pointers and setters are a little far apart. The hounds are going to be ranging much, much further than the city people is going to be accustomed to, which I mean that a dog that's running a coyote or a bear could be a mile away from you. But these guys that have a dog that's running a mile away from them, they have other people in the woods. These dogs have e-collars on their necks and GPS tracking system
on their necks. So all it takes is a phone call or a radio call from somebody else that's in your group, and they get zapped, they get tased. They can't run that deer anymore. Boom. If you get hit with a taser, you can't run very well.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief as well. I think the owner responsibility was definitely something I wanted to touch on. We talked a lot about that. And secondly, would like to, again, offer to work on some of the things where we could maybe find a little bit better ground on it. So,
Representative Urizo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly for Representative Ansel's benefit, this bill wouldn't change anything for areas like Shoreview where discharge of firearms is not allowed. And we, by the way, have a surplus of deer.
We can change that.
Anyone in the audience from the public that would like to speak for or against the bill? Please come forward. Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Craig Engwall from the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association again. And the committee members' questions really addressed the key points I had to make. So in the interest of time, I just wanted to go on record saying that MDHA opposes the bill and supports existing law.
Very good. Questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Members, there are also some handouts in the in your files, in your folders. One from Scott Slocum on a an article that was done on this issue. And then also some written testimony from Nancy Christopher that you might want to take a look at. With that, members, I will renew. Any closing comments, Representative Newton?
No, thank you for your indulgence.
The chair will renew his motion that House File 280 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus game and fish bill. Thank you for bringing your bills forward.
Thank you.
Members, a couple of comments. Tomorrow we will be hearing a Sarah Anderson bill, and Tom Enzelt, Representative Enzelt, will have a bill before our committee. And also, the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association is having a legislative reception at 5 o'clock, is it? Starting at 5 o'clock at the Kelly Inn right next door for those members that are interested. Please stop by and visit with the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. Anything else that anyone has before the committee? Representative Bill.
Thank you. I just thought it would be proper in this committee to announce that Voyageurs National Park is closing some snowmobile trails and rerouting them into another area because there is a wolf that is chasing snowmobilers and they're intending to take soon action at it. It's been released by the National Park Service. So maybe we should send that to the judge out in D.C. and you could take that under advisement.
Okay. Thank you for that. Members, meeting is adjourned.